This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana, originating from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Robin Dow is producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. And in a bit, we're going to hear from Dr. Angel Bradford and Dr. Jeff Sado on the election 1 week ago today. America and Louisiana and Baton Rouge cast ballots. And, of course, the elections, shall we say, quite provocative. We'll talk about it with our guests and where we go from here. But we start with Mary Stein. That's some really educated people on today. Mary's got 4 degrees from major universities, including 3 from our alma mater, Louisiana State University, meaning there are 4 degrees of separation between Mary and 2 members of our congressional delegation. But she is here to talk about all the magnificent things happening at the East Baton Rouge Parish Library, getting close to 250,000 active cardholders. And you had some purged from the rolls, didn't you?
Yeah, we
but
did.
You're getting back to where you were.
We're clawing our way back up, Jim.
Well, that's amazing because when we calculate the parish, I think there are like 450-some thousand people in the parish.
That's right.
Which means even with the purging, more than half the people living here have cards.
That's right.
Baton Rouge Parish
and
Library.
They're taking advantage of what the card allows them to do.
How many people go through the doors every year?
Well, already we've counted about 1.5 million.
For 2024?
Yes, sir.
1.5 million.
Yeah. Again, clawing our way back up.
Well, speaking of clawing, I hear that the tiger cage at LSU is the #1 tourist attraction in Baton Rouge. I wonder if 1.5 million people go to the tiger cage.
Absolutely, they do.
They do.
And whenever we have an out-of-town author, that's one of the places we take them.
They've got to see the tiger, but they want to see Mike, not Omar.
That's right.
Okay. Well, anyway, Mike is cared for rather well, and he didn't have to go to the game, but you don't have to go to the library, but I would encourage people to do so. And one of the things we ought to tout ourselves as being is we're one of the most literate places on the planet. We have problems with poverty and education, which often elicits people who cannot read, but most of us can, and most of us do, and most of us go to the library. And it was quite a month of October.
It was. Oh, my gosh. The Maker Faire, almost 3,000 people came, and they stayed and stayed all day. Grandparents, grandchildren, parents, 20-somethings, Gen Xers, everyone was there making things, making noise, because we had a musical theme. We even premiered or talked about the new music platform that we are going to launch in January for local artists to be able to show their stuff. The same way we have some platforms for authors that they can write and then put their stuff out there for all to read. So we leaned into what you yourself can make and do. And the book festival was phenomenal. This weekend, we're going to lighten up, because November maybe needs a little lightening up, and we're going to go with Game On at the library. Again, something for the whole family.
Game.
That's right.
On? Life,
yes, it's International Game Day. And during COVID, we all realized, you know, people don't talk anymore. Family gaming became a thing again, and the library even checks
out. We're not talking LSU, Florida.
We're talking about interactions around a table with a family or friends. So everything from live-action games, life-size games, board games, card games, all kinds of games, computer games. So when I say gaming, I don't mean going down to the boat.
When you were a kid, what was your favorite game?
You know, we did play Risk.
Risk?
Yeah, and it took a while. So, but there wasn't anything else to do.
Risk.
It worked out.
Yeah, well.
And Clue.
That was a good one.
Come on. Who doesn't love Clue?
One. You played Monopoly, right? Clue, yeah.
Yes.
Clue. I was going to say Clue. I was going to guess Clue.
But, yeah, Clue was my personal favorite, but it's not the one that I could convince my brothers to play all the time.
And those games have stood the test of time.
Absolutely. And you can still check them out at the library and bring them home for family night or game night.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, research shows that when you're playing a game, you're leaning into those critical thinking skills. So my favorite kind of learning is stealth learning with the kids. So games are one way to do it. It's a great way for logic, reasoning, math skills, all those kinds of things.
I bet you're great at crossword puzzles.
I do love them, and my Sudoku have to do it. And that's good for your brain, you know. So
you can't keep Mary down with her 4 degrees.
You all can do it. Come on. There's something for everyone. So we'll be doing that this weekend and all around the parish, not just at the main library. Branches are leaning into that topic as well. And then we've been having some wonderful programs with the Kids Orchestra. They're going to celebrate the traditions of water through Indigenous people with some wonderful theatrical musical productions that scattered around the parish. We're doing Cherokee Tales for the kids with Bright Star Theater. And then if you want to reverse track, we've just launched some new coding online platforms for you to teach your kids how to code. Frankly, I should do it too. Then I'd be ready for the next 10 years.
All right. Well, on November 20th, Smiley Anders, the late, great Smiley Anders, his 87th birthday, the anniversary of his birth, you'll have a celebration not only for Smiley, who is a frequent patron at the library.
Yes,
but
he was.
But at the main library on Goodwood, you will have, is that GIS Day?
Right. It's spelled out, you know, not GIS, but GIS Day is Geographical Information Systems. And, you know, Baton Rouge needs to celebrate the fact that we have just been named the top third digital city in our size. And it's because of things like this, the open data that the city does, mm-hmm. ways to use technology to make policy decisions. Mm-hmm. So we'll be talking about that.
Do we still have G.I. Joe?
You know, G.I. Joe is still a thing. And if you had come to Attic Treasures, you might have seen how much he's selling on the market. So,
G.I. Joe, fighting man from head to toe.
Yeah,
on the land, on the sea, in the air. Fairly in Mid-City, you're on with Mary. Hi, good morning, Fairly.
Good morning, Jim and Mary. Mary, I just wanted to thank you for all of your collaboration you do across the community, and especially what you've done for the kids for the East Baton Rouge Parish School System by allowing the community bus stops. I think it's introduced the library system to so many families and kids, and just want to thank you for that.
Oh, we love having the kids pop in after school at Blue Bonnet as well as Maine, and sometimes some other branches too, because they're coming into a safe place and we've got a lot for them.
Well, good to hear your voice, Fairly, and let's talk soon. It's always a pleasure to hear from Fairly Jackson, who is still a major part of our community. And we're speaking of common last names, there's Jackson, and then there's Johnson, and Coach Jay Johnson, the national champion baseball coach of a few years ago for the LSU Fighting Tigers. He'll be in a virtual presentation.
That's right. That's right.
Also on November 20th.
Yeah, it's a good day. It's a good day to be Wednesday at the library. Virtually, the coach will be joining us on one of our Strictly Business episodes. And I get so much out of these. You're connected with somebody with a local context, but they're sharing interesting insights through a business mm-hmm. lens. So I really love this series.
And November is National Novel Writing
That's
Month.
Right. Yeah, you know, they call it NaNoWriMo because they can. But again, we celebrate creative writing, whether you're doing it as a leisure writer or you're working professionally or trying to break into the writing game. So there's many programs around novel writing and then nonfiction writing. And that leads me to the fact that we love to celebrate our authors, and Jan Rischer will be joining us
on this show in
That's
just
right.
a bit.
That's right.
That's the 17th, right, as in 5 days from now.
That's right. It'll
Sunday.
Be Sunday afternoon at the main library. And it kind of—
3 o'clock?
Yes. It kind of riffs off some of the programs we've been doing this fall have been about being intentional and communicating and being careful with taking care with our relationships. And her book is perfect because it's put the cell phones down at the dinner table just in time for the holidays.
It's called The Questions of the Day.
That's right. And this will be that one provocative question to get the conversation started.
KQXL, Genevieve Stewart used to host a show called The Question of the Day, and it was the most popular radio talk show in this city for a long, long while. So Jan Risher's book is The Questions of the Day, and we'll find out more about it in just a bit from Jan herself. But a couple of things. We talk a lot about the main library, but how many locations are there?
Currently 14, but Jim, there'll be a 15th one in the spring because the South Branch is really coming along.
This is Perkins in Glasgow, right?
That's right. There's one block back from Perkins. So Catty Corner just sprouts if you're right, imagining so anything.
And heavily traveled area, I'm sure it'll be a hot spot. But what's happening at the Scotlandville Library?
So for Scotlandville, we need to renovate the real library, but we also needed to build a storage annex for the archives because they've grown. So we built the archives annex, and then we're moving the library into it temporarily while we rework the library itself. So by next week, we'll be opening up that archives annex, and it'll take about a year and a half for us to finish the real building, but this way we don't disrupt service to that important area.
Well, thank you for your November visit. We'll hear from Mary again next month, but we'll be back with more Talk Louisiana after this. This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757, and it is 1 week removed now from the national election, and we're visiting with Professor Jeffrey Dennis Satto of LSU Shreveport, a political scientist of renown and a card-carrying conservative, and Angel Bradford, Dr. Bradford, is scheduled to be with us, a young activist whose twin sister is Caitlin Joshua, who was with us last week. And let's start with Jeff, who talked about or wrote about the problems in polling with a firm in his backyard, Vantage Data House. Respected pollster Jim Kitchens, one of the best in the business, collaborated with a young man who's a data whiz and Bishop George, and they came up with some numbers. They ran a test run in Louisiana last year, did well, but their numbers nationally were abysmal. They were off target, and they were predicting a Harris win. And as we know, Kamala Harris did not win the election. Donald Trump did. Jeff Satto, do they have egg on their face?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I mean, they, you know, not only did they predict a Harris victory, but they predicted a big Harris victory, and the numbers they had were outside the margin of error that they had built into their to their poll. So, yeah, that was a pretty bad miss, although they said subsequently that their aim in their business is not so much really national elections, but looking at elections, states within states, and even drilling down further. So it was kind of an attention-grabbing move, and it did grab attention, but apparently in the wrong direction.
Well, some good pollsters have missed before. Dick Morris, of course, on Election Day in 2012, picked Romney to beat Obama, and that one wasn't even as close as this one. And this is a resounding win for Donald John Trump. He won nationally when the votes are all counted. It'll be around 3 million votes in the overall vote. He's at 50.3%, so he'll probably finish above 50%, but barely. But that's a significant accomplishment, and he'll be the first. He was the first to get more than 60% of the votes in Louisiana since Ronald Reagan in 1984. And as I mentioned, the SEC, the 12 states, voted collectively for Trump over Harris by over 8 million votes, and she won the rest of the country by more than 5 million, but the rest of the country is joined by the 12 SEC states, which Trump won 160-0 in the Electoral College. The South has risen again, Jeff Satto.
Yeah, I mean, there was maybe the thinking that the solid South, now Republican as opposed to the Democrat version of decades ago, was it was maybe not going to be so solid anymore, but that seems not to have been the case, at least not in this direction, this election. But, you know, again, some of the margins are pretty narrow, you know, looking at.
Not in the South. Not in the South. Only one state. Only Georgia.
Yeah, well, okay, North Carolina.
Well, North Carolina is not in the SEC, but it is in the South.
All right. I was thinking of the South. Of the South, not the SEC. But, yeah, okay, I'll concede that.
Georgia's the only one. In fact, if you get past Georgia, the closest one, I think, was in Missouri, and that was over 10%, well over 10%. In fact, I did all the numbers for the entire region last night, and Trump won by 60-40 in the South, in the SEC, rather, and she won 53-47 in the rest of the country. But we do have a United States of America. But it is remarkable, Dr. Angel Bradford has joined us, that the SEC states have more than 40% of the African-American population in America, and they're the most conservative states in America. How do you explain that?
Mm. Well, first things first, I'll just say I'm just gel in this space. I'm just in gel. I knock on doors and volunteer with organizations and elections. I'm not as worried about it as I thought I would be. We did a lot, but I think we saw a lot of trends happening at the national level, especially with the Democratic Party, that were concerning over the last couple of cycles, especially with like the lack of primaries and that sort of thing, and really having a candidate that folks felt like they could rally around. And so I am not as worried. I think for us, it's just like, how do you go get those non-voters? And 60-40, yeah, it sucks. But like, also, I don't only look at the SEC for my numbers. I do care about my HBCUs and other groups too. And the coalition's just going to look different.
Well, and if Vice President Harris had won in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, the SEC would have been irrelevant. She would have been the president. But she didn't. Yeah. Those were close states. But she lost all seven of the swing states. And yeah. Donald Trump is king of the world for the next 4 years. He is the most powerful person in the world. And today he named, according to reports, Marco Rubio is the next Secretary of State. I'm sure he will be approved. Senator Rubio is popular with his cohorts in the Senate. Republicans have the majority. And the man from Florida, who Lanny Keller told me is married to a Miami Dolphins cheerleader, he will be the next Secretary of State, and that means Jeff Landry will not. And Jeff, there was some speculation, Jeff Sato, that Governor Landry was on the short list.
For Attorney General, surely. Well, you know, I think he pretty much quashed all that. Governor Landry's got plenty of business going on here, a lot of unfinished business, and so. Yeah, I don't think he was going to go anywhere, even if he'd been given a really plum position.
Well, Attorney General would seem to be the best fit, since he was Attorney General of the great state of Louisiana. And according to our Constitution, if he were to do that, Billy Nungesser would be the governor for the entire term. There would not be a special election. He would ascend to the governorship. And there is this perception, Angel, that Democrats have, some do, that Nungesser would be a little easier to work with. Would you rather have Billy than
I
Jeff?
Would. I don't even need to let you finish the sentence. It's ridiculous, right? I don't want to put Landry on the rest of the country, but I personally would love to not have to deal with him for three more years.
Well, he's going big, Jeff. He's got this tax session that's ongoing as we speak at the Capitol, and it looks like he'll get most of what he wants in the session, and then it goes to a vote in March. What do you make of what's going on right now regarding the revamping of the tax structure in our state?
I think it's badly needed. Touch and go, though, because it really hangs together. I mean, the different parts of it that are being looked at all really are dependent on each other. There's not much you can do in removing some of it and having the whole of the rest of it hang in there consistently. So that's going to be a tough task, I think, maybe 50-50 at best that's going to work. I mean, there's already significant opposition in some places. Primarily, I would say the number one opposition right now that could derail, at least in part, if not the whole thing, is dealing with the motion picture investor tax credit. When you have paying basically a lot of people paying for a very few to get the benefits, those very few are going to mount a very spirited defense. So, by no means is this a done deal. I think there's going to be some considerable resistance to overcome, which I think and I hope will be overcome, but, you know, we'll have to see.
Do you think getting rid of the film credits, the benefits for the industry, would be a good thing?
Study after study shows that they don't return nearly, maybe a quarter of what they take out of the state treasury.
Well, it has an intangible effect, though, that some...
Right, but you know, you could say, all right, well, but why are we steering in the direction of that particular industry? Why do we not just basically, let everybody have a chance at that money in the private sector, and it might go to more productive uses than if you take it out of taxpayers' pockets and steer it in one particular direction.
It does promote our state, though, and Angele, what are your thoughts about preserving the film?
I was just going over a fact sheet of theirs, and I did not memorize it. I should have, but I do think we should. Like, it's a unique industry. I think that we already prop up other industries like oil and gas, even though they don't have the return on investment nearly that they used to. And so we should keep that. It gives folks insight into our culture and our way of life. And so it's worth preserving. And then I've been watching a couple of the hearings, and there's been some genuine debate around the value of preserving our historic structures as well.
877-217-5757, your number. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A bit more time with Dr. Jeff Satto in Shreveport, where he has been a professor of note in the Department of Political Science at LSU Shreveport for many years. And he is a graduate of University of Oklahoma and Vanderbilt. And Dr. Angele Bradford, graduate of Ohio State. 2 degrees from?
No, undergrad, Ohio State, master's, Southern, and then PhD, Tulane Med.
Tulane Med. Two well-educated people on different sides of the political spectrum, and of course, we invite your participation as always at 877-217-5757. And we're in a new world now with Donald Trump, the president-elect. He's the modern-day Grover Cleveland. He'll be 45 and 47 in the honor roll, and he will have a compliant House and Senate, it appears, and also, of course, the Supreme Court is largely conservative, and 7 of the 9 justices were appointed, 6 of the 9 by Republican presidents. And your number again, 877-217-5757, emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. And a question from a listener about what does this mean, Jeff Satto, for Bill Cassidy, William Morgan Cassidy, who is running for re-election next year, or 2026, almost next year, a little over a year. He'll be campaigning a year from now, obviously, but he wants another term, but he voted to impeach Trump, and Trump is back. What happens next, Jeff?
Yeah, I wouldn't expect, Don Jr. coming in and campaigning on his behalf, as, maybe some other statewide elections have seen in the last year or so. That's certainly not going to win any fans of the incoming White House for Cassidy, and that's certainly not going to help his reelection campaign, which is, he's stockpiled a lot of money, so he's definitely there and gonna make a show of it. But I haven't seen polls recently on like his popularity or anything. It's been a while, but the last ones I saw were among Republicans were not that encouraging. So he's gonna get some spirited competition, I'm sure. Maybe from a guy that's being talked about going to the Trump administration. Maybe Cassidy hopes that happens. Our state treasurer, John Fleming, and potentially others as well. So it's going to be, next year, 2025, I think it's going to be the most interesting election that we're looking at in the next couple of years.
Well, and it looks like it'll be a closed primary, and it could mean that somebody like Clay Higgins could get in the race and be a factor. Who would be your preference, Jeff Satto?
Oh, I really don't have one at this point. I think probably Fleming would be a stronger candidate than Higgins. Higgins is an interesting guy.
Fleming ran once before and got creamed in a Senate race. He finished way behind not only John Kennedy, but also Foster Campbell and Caroline Fayard and Charlie Bustani, and he did not do well. But you, and he's in his 70s. He looks great, but
yeah, he, that's true. You know, of course, we got, you know, a guy roughly his age in there right now, a little bit older, maybe, in fact.
In Kennedy,
you know, in Kennedy. So yeah, it's
John Kennedy is about a few days away from being 73 years old.
Yeah, how do you like that? seems like yesterday. It's I think the operative word here is just the competition will be spirited. There's going to be probably several people throwing their hats into the ring, and because of the perceived vulnerability that Cassidy has among Republicans, with, as you mentioned, the new closed primary taking effect. So, this ought to be even more interesting than the governor's race, and probably less one-sided.
And Angel, there's some discussion. I don't know how serious it is, but it would make sense, and there might be some pressure from the Democrats to make it happen. If John Bel Edwards got in that race, he would suddenly be a factor against, I think, Cassidy or Higgins or Fleming or any other Republican. That would be a fascinating race in an off year.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. It makes sense to me. I would support that 100%. If Foster Campbell, I wish he would. I love him. I love him and the work he's done as well, but I'm sure he wouldn't.
Well, he ran
before.
Buddy, you never know. And Foster is even older than John Kennedy.
So probably not. But there's other senators.
Not quite.
He's only
77. Let's not.
Not right off everybody who's in their 70s.
Let's not get carried away.
Yeah.
77's a young man today. He's younger than Trump.
Right.
And Trump's king of the world. But what do you make of the Democratic Party nationally? In Louisiana right now, it's on life support. But nationally, was this a death knell, or is this a way to rejuvenate the party? Obviously, everybody needs a good villain. The Democratic Party have the ultimate villain for them in Donald John Trump. What do you make of it?
I really think it's a revival opportunity. I'm not excited about 2 years of Trump. Well, I say 2 years because, well, first of all, I don't know if I think that the House goes to the Republicans still. I'm still holding out hope. But aside from that, I think that Trump will do enough damage in 2 years that in 2 years we'll be seeing a blue wave. But I hate banking on that because I think about things like healthcare and the climate crisis, and waiting on those things and waiting to make a move on those things is a concern. But 4 years from now, I could see that he has completely trashed the country and ruined a lot of systems and institutions.
Let's hope that doesn't happen. But.
Yeah, but I see it. He's made those promises, and he has the opportunity with the people around him to make good on those promises. So I think it's an opportunity for the Democratic Party to really move towards the communities that have supported them and work on those non-voters and folks who have become disillusioned with the system but who don't want to burn it down. And I think there's plenty of folks and voters who feel that way.
All right. And Jeff, how do you see the Democratic Party and your party, the Republican Party, post-Trump? But right now it is all Trump for the next 4 years, and who knows what happens after that. I suspect a Trumpian person will succeed him as the flag bearer for the party. But your thoughts?
Yeah, well, the Democrats face something like this in after 1988. Three straight trouncings, and the party recalibrated to some degree with Bill Clinton, who was, you know, not that centrist, but certainly more centrist than some of the alternatives at the time. Now here we are, almost 40 years later, and maybe it'll happen again, but I think there's considerable resistance to that. What we might call the progressive wing of the party is just kind of living in a fantasy land now, and they, you know, they're going to react very strongly to trying to take the party more towards the center, which I think the election results clearly indicate is the direction for them to head. We look at the way the demographic groups voted in the election, so. I don't know what's going to happen there. History tells us that parties recalibrate in that way, but I think there's going to be a lot of resistance to that in this instance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately for the Democrats, I think their worst nightmare is going to be the very clearly the front runner for 2028, and that's J.D. Vance. And I think they are scared to death of him.
I think that's the wrong lesson from the election.
And you're an Ohio State grad, as is J.D. Vance.
Yeah.
But listener asks for you, this is Tom on Bluebonnet. What do you make of all the finger pointing now about the Harris campaign? Because Tom says he thinks, and I agree with him, that she ran a good campaign. She just didn't win 107 days. But now all of a sudden, I saw this with Eddie Rasponi, the poor guy. He runs one campaign and loses a close race, and he's trash, and he ran a trashy campaign. It was John Kennedy, the other John Kennedy, the one who was the Pulitzer Prize winner, who said that victory has 1,000 fathers and defeat is an orphan. But what about Harris?
So, kind of picking back off of what I was getting at, like, I think people are getting the wrong answers from this election. I don't think that the party should run to the center. We've been doing that ever since 2016. I actually refute even what Bernie Sanders wrote on Twitter about the middle class and the working class. We have been advocating for them and on those issues, and Harris really pushed telling her story about her mother and breast cancer and middle class upbringing,
McDonald's.
Everything, right? Like, so that's not the point. People were disillusioned. They stayed home. We had just enough people that did not vote everywhere. So we lost everywhere. And so it's not really, I think actually we should be moving more to the left and we should be more clear on the issue. So Harris didn't have enough time. Biden, I do think, should have gotten out earlier. I won't say too much. Obviously, my sister has been a surrogate for the campaign, so I won't say too much. I adore Kamala Harris. I'm excited to see what she'll do next. And I just hope the party learns that we have to have primaries. I think that's the big lesson between the pro-Palestine wing of the party and then those like me who really are concerned about climate crisis, other big issues. We have to talk about those things well in advance.
All right. Finally, Hal in Monroe. It's a question for Jeff, but I think it's appropriate for both to answer about did the Democrats spend too much time on the choice issue, on reproductive rights? Was it overplayed at the expense of other issues?
To a certain extent. I mean, the overriding issue by far was the economy, inflation in particular, and secondarily more immigration. And, those issues, the Democrats were well underwater with the electorate. So, you know, in some sense, I can see them trying to play to what they perceive to be their strength. But in the electorate as a whole, when you look at the abortion, it was like maybe the fourth or fifth most important. It badly trailed, again, top two in inflation and immigration. So that's kind of the hand they were dealt with. It'd be tough to deal with something like that. But there should have been probably more emphasis on trying to at least explain away the Biden-Harris triggered inflation and the economic situation.
All right. The economy, as stated, much of it is doing well, but inflation was rampant here and all over the world. But the Democrats thought they had the mother load in the reproductive rights issue. But as it turned out, Harris didn't do any better among women than Biden did. Mm-hmm. What happened?
I think that split there speaks to a lot of different things that we still have to piece apart. But I think there's an exceptionalism there. Like, a lot of women just don't think it's going to happen to them. They're in a state where they think they're going to be safe because their state recently passed a proposition, or they think their healthcare provider is going to have their back. And I think in those instances, you're talking about privilege, especially for white women compared to black women and maternal mortality rates. And that's just something we didn't have enough time to tackle.
Well, thank you, Drs. Bradford and Sato. We'll talk again soon, I hope. And we're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Your number 877-217-5757. Jan Risher, entertainment writer and editor for The Advocate, and she is carrying the flame to some extent that was carried for a generation or two by Smiley Gray Anders, who started his column on June 4th, 1979, and he died just before the 45th anniversary on the 31st day of May, and this is his birthday month, November 20th. But Jan, you became very close to Smiley, and like Smiley, you've now written a book.
This is my third book, but this but book, a book is not a book. This is a book for people to interact with. This is a book with questions, and my mission is for people to put down their phones and to have conversation. And this is a way to start those conversations.
And Mary Stein, who was here earlier, says Sunday, 3 o'clock, you'll be at the main library.
I will be at the main library. And I'll be at Cavalier Books on Saturday afternoon as well in Denham
they
Springs.
They run a very good shop there in lovely Livingston Parish, Cavalier Books. The questions of the day.
It's actually called Q of the D. That's what I used to post a lot on Facebook. And, you know, you can have conversation with people regardless. I feel like I'm sandwiched between a lot of political stuff here today. But, you know, I think that this is a time when we need to have conversation that's about something that we can agree on.
Well, and sometimes if we don't agree, it's fun to talk about.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it's fun to joust.
It is fun to joust, but it's also fun to be reminded of why we can like each other as well.
Well, I remember Jimmy Fitzmaurice, the lieutenant governor. He was the first person who said it, and I remembered it, and I've heard others say the same thing. He says, you can disagree without being disagreeable, and here's a guy who lost the mayor's race in New Orleans by about 100 votes and then lost the governor's race in Louisiana in a recount, and he was one of the most gallant men who ever participated in Louisiana politics. But right now, we do have a very tense country. I think that's fair to say. And books are a way to, I think, calm down the temperature, to turn it down a bit.
I think conversation and finding those moments that we can share and the spirits that can bring us close. And I don't mean to sound like completely Pollyanna. I mean, I've been living this. My family and I have been doing this for more than two decades around our table. I call it, it's a Spanish word called sobremesa. And sober mesa is not directly translated into English, but it means that time after a meal when you sit around the table and you have real conversation that's meaningful. And so my goal is for this book to be a way to kind of jump that off.
Well, Jan is a daughter of the South and logged a lot of years not only in the Magnolia State, but in lovely Lafayette.
That's right. I was there for 20 years.
And now you've been in Baton Rouge for
almost 3 years.
Isn't that amazing?
It is.
And there are some distinctions. We're only an hour apart, but in some ways we're a world apart.
Totally different places. And I loved my time in Lafayette, but I truly love being in Baton Rouge.
And you know what? They're two of the great cities in America, I believe, but there's some hostility there. What's that all about?
I think that Atchafalaya Basin separates and the bridge is so difficult. Mm-hmm. Literally and metaphorically, to get from there to here. Mm-hmm. And I think that most people from Lafayette and Acadiana, the main thing that they know about Baton Rouge is how difficult it is to get through Baton Rouge. And that taints a lot of perspective.
Well, as a person who does business statewide, I can tell you that in New Orleans, with the elite in New Orleans, we're viewed as a cow town. And in Lafayette, we're viewed as the big kid on the block who needs to be brought down because of the state capitol and LSU. So there's some truth to both, but both of those are, that's hyperbole at best and a misconception, I think. You've lived in both places and you've thrived in both, haven't you?
I would like to think so, but I also really think that there's so much to Baton Rouge that without spending some real time here and living in the neighborhoods that you just don't get. I find Baton Rouge to be an incredibly friendly town. I love the neighborhood spirit in Baton Rouge. I've never lived in a place that I thought was quite as neighborhood proud as Baton Rouge is, and you know, just in terms of the personalities. And I found my people here for sure.
So do you live in Baton Rouge, Central, Zachary, Baker, St. George? Where do you live?
I live within walking distance to LSU.
There you go. I like that. That's the best part of town, according to some of us. And it's close to Louis, where I go almost every morning. And we have our places and have our habits, but Baton Rouge is a big part of it, of the world of Jan Risher now. And Q of the day, Q of the D. What are some of the Qs of the D?
Well, what's the last movie you went to the theater to see, Jim?
The last movie, and I haven't been going to the theater that often, and I'm trying to think. I went, believe it or not, I was in Atlanta, and I went to the Georgia Film Festival, and I saw a movie called Caterpillar, You'll have to look it up. It was very good, by the way. It was very good. That was about three months ago.
And what's a small purchase that you make far too often?
A cup of coffee. It was 7 cents at the Union when I was a freshman in 1977.
It is not 7 cents anymore.
It's like $7 now.
All right, one more. These are just all from one page. They're dated. So what's your favorite back-to-school shopping memory?
My favorite back-to-school shopping memory. Well, I remember when I was a kid in North Little Rock at St. Patrick's, I used to like to get the knapsacks. And yeah, that was nice for school. And I would get a new one every year. Yeah, and I'd walk to school every morning through a few alleys, little urban setting. And I kept a lot of things in those knapsacks just for safety.
There you go. I don't know if we should ask what.
But let's bring you back. You're fun, and she has taken the town by storm. The features editor for The Advocate, Jan Risher. And in our remaining time, we have another Baton Rougean who stands tall and proud with an important organization, Volunteers of America. Shannon Abney was with us last year. And this is an opportunity for our listeners. And many took advantage of it last year after hearing your voice. Tell us what's in the offing as far as trying to help your taxes and do a good thing for the state and for the city of Baton Rouge and for the community at large.
Thank you, Jim. So Louisiana businesses can donate up to $5,000 a year to early childhood education directly in their community and receive a 100% refundable dollar for dollar state tax credit. So, and when I say dollar for dollar, it's a 100% refundable state tax credit. So
100%.
Every dollar, yes, every dollar you get
up to a certain level,
you get up to $5,000, any amount, and every dollar you give, you get back. Even if you don't owe taxes, you would get your money back as a refund.
And a listener last year after you left asked a good point and said you should have asked her, how do you do it? Do you just get your person who handles it, or if you handle it yourself, is it easily discerned as when you're actually doing your taxes?
Well, it's super easy because you make a donation to Volunteers of America, to our early childhood program. We serve 23 parishes in the state. And it's as easy as make your donation to VOA, and we supply all of the tax credit documentation necessary, and you get that within 2 weeks. And when you do your taxes, it's a line item on your income taxes, and you just put your $5,000 in, and it decreases what you owe by the amount that you donate. And the one thing, this tax credit can be taken on your individual income tax return or your corporate. So either one. Mm-hmm. So if your business is a flow through entity, and you file that on your individual income taxes, you can do it there as well. In the cases if you're a LLC or an S corp.
And it's for a good cause.
Absolutely.
What are some of the things this tax credit will be used for?
So our goal is to get Louisiana's youngest children ready for kindergarten, to succeed in kindergarten and to succeed in life. And depending on how much we raise each year, we get to do fun, exciting projects that really increase the quality of early childhood education. Mm-hmm. And one thing, for instance, we have Teacher Institute. It's a program where early childhood teachers can get their early childhood ancillary certificate. We put the program on. This past year, 30 teachers graduated through this program. We also have Project PlaySmart, where we fund complete classroom makeovers, where we pick 8 deserving early learning centers in the community, and we completely give them the classroom of their dreams.
Well, for those who would like to contact your office, Volunteers of America, find out a bit more beyond what we've talked about today, what's the best way to find you?
So the best way is to go to our tax credit website, getsmartla.org. You can contact me directly. My contact information is on the website. I always encourage businesses to talk to their CPA. We are most all of the CPA firms in town are familiar with this tax credit. We work closely with them. They're very supportive. I have over 15 CPAs that actually do the credit. So talk to your CPA and contact us.
And the website again is?
getsmartla.org.
Phone number?
225-408-3794.
Shannon Abney, Vice President, Chief Development Officer for Volunteers of America. Thank you. And you're doing worthy stuff, and I hope people will take advantage of this. Thank you.
Thank you.
And tomorrow, among the guests, will be General Russell Honoré. I'm sure he'll have some thoughts about what happens to the Green Army in the new day in America. And a reminder also that this Sunday, 3 o'clock at the Main Library, the Goodwood location, you can see and hear more from Jan Risher of The Advocate with her book. Once again, the title again is
Q of the D.
Q of the D. We're back tomorrow. Until then, thanks for listening today. Stay safe and stay tuned.